Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Mary Petras on behalf of Stephen Berry. Because Mr. Berry's stipulated sentence was determined based on a guideline sentencing range that has now been reduced, Mr. Berry was eligible for sentence reduction under Section 3582. The issue here is whether or not Mr. Berry was, in the words of Section 3582, a defendant who has been sentenced to a term of imprisonment based on a sentencing range. It has to be a qualifying sentencing range, and there's no disagreement here that if Mr. Berry's sentence was determined based on the range that we submit the sentence was determined based on, it is a qualifying range and has been reduced by the amendments to the crack cocaine guidelines. Mr. Berry's sentence.
And how do we know that in this case?
We know that based
since
on
the plea doesn't say anything about it.
The plea says one critical thing, and that is that the plea agrees to a stipulated amount of crack cocaine that Mr. Berry is agreeing to be responsible for of 150 to 500 grams. Yeah. That stipulation, along with the pre-sentence report, which determines the guideline range,
We don't have the pre-sentence report in the record, do we?
I believe the pre-sentence report is part of the record, Your Honor. I didn't put it as part of my appendix. My understanding was that we no longer filed sealed appendixes with the pre-sentence report. Right. I can certainly do that if the court wanted
to. No, that's
okay.
That's all right.
But it is part of the record before the court. And in the pre-sentence report, the guideline calculation is done. And the guideline calculation, absent the application of the career offender provision, comes out to a range of 168 to 210 months. The stipulated sentence was 168 months. The government's suggesting that the 168 months is not related to the guideline range really doesn't take into account the practice before the district court. Every criminal defense attorney and every prosecutor who gets a case gets that case and calculates the guidelines, and that's where plea negotiations began. It was not a mere coincidence that Mr. Berry's stipulated sentence is 168 months and the bottom of the non-career offender guidelines is 168 months. I know that the government has submitted that it wasn't based on that and is now trying to make some sort of argument based on that, but the government made no such argument before the district court. Mr. Berry, in his pro se pleading and then in the supplemental pleading that we filed, both set forth our position that 168-month term was determined based on the non-career offender guideline range.
So your position, you're not taking the position, are you, that any C plea is based upon? Your position, as I understand it, is that a C plea could be based on. It just depends on what the record shows.
On behalf of Mr. Berry, yes, because Mr. Berry's record does show that. I think there is certainly an argument to be made, although perhaps it's foreclosed by Cook, that any sentence is in some way based on the guidelines because Gaul requires that.
Right, but you're not making that argument in this case.
It's not necessary to make that argument in this case.
Do you know what percentage of pleas are C pleas as opposed to other kinds of pleas? Do you know?
I don't have a factual. I can't tell the court.
What's your instinct?
I was in charge in my office of doing the crack cocaine reduction, so I did review approximately 600 cases where crack cocaine guidelines were in one way or another involved. I would say that there were probably 20 cases that Rule 11C, please.
So it's not the major.
It's not the norm.
And is there something about C? Is there something about the crime that, or the case that would produce a C plea as opposed to some other kind of plea?
In my practice, the thing that primarily produces a C plea is the defendant, because there are some defendants that just want a guarantee and will not take any other kind of plea. Uh-huh. And then it's the exception where the government will agree to it, but there could be any number of factors. And I recognize that. And one of the things that the government says is that it's not just the guidelines that determined this. There were a number of factors that went into the plea negotiations. But it's clear, at least in this case, that they came up with a number of 168 months. Whatever the government has to say about, well, Mr. Berry shouldn't get it because he got these other benefits and it's not this 168-month term was the appropriate term, that would go to the district court's discretionary decision about whether or not the sentence should be reduced. But once it's determined that the sentence was based on in some way, and this court has held that construed in its ordinary sense, the phrase based on refers for purposes of Section 3582C2 to a guideline range that determined the defendant's sentence. And here, it's clear that this is the guideline range that determined his sentence, because when you do the non-career offender guideline range, you come up with 168 months, and the parties determined.
What about the government's argument? And I know you say they didn't make it in the district court, but just address it for me, would you, that they say, in fact, he was eligible for the career offender guideline, and that this represented a departure below that range.
Even if that is so, if it wasn't disputed below that he was a career offender and there wasn't some argument about that, once the parties take it out of that and the parties agree and say, well, he's a career offender, but we're going to agree to the non-career offender range, and we think in that case that's more appropriate here. Uh-huh. So we agree that the non-career offender range, and we'll agree to the bottom of the range, is more appropriate here. I think even in that case, even if everyone on the record had said that he was a career offender, it still would fall under 3582, because...
Wouldn't you then say, well, they started with the guidelines, but because they departed, everybody agreed to depart downward from them, that it's no longer based on?
Well, it is based on a non-career offender range, because they departed uh-huh. downward to a specific...
I see. So your theory is what they agreed to was to depart downward from the career offender to the non-career offender range.
Right, and that certainly is not unusual in
a career offender case. And how would we know that in this case, just by picking noticing that the number is at the bottom of the range?
Well, it wasn't disputed below, uh-huh. and it does, and it's not a mere coincidence. And we know from the practice in district court that this is how the guidelines are calculated and the plea agreement has come to. If the government wanted to dispute that, they should have disputed it below. And I will say, if the court has any doubt as to whether or not the record is sufficient to support that, then it should be the district court that determines whether or not it was based on that non-career offender crack cocaine range that's been reduced.
So your argument is, if the plea agreement itself refers to a guideline section with regard to the amount of drugs, that is one indication that the plea is based on the guidelines.
I do think that is one indication, and I think it was the Fifth Circuit in their recent case said that there can be no wooden rules.
No, but I'm just trying to understand your position.
Yes.
So that would mean that any time there's a reference to the guideline in a material way, then a sentence is based on. I'm just pushing you so I understand.
I think that there's a little bit more here. I think if there was a reference to a guideline range, but we agreed to a number that had no relation to that guideline range,
all right,
then it wouldn't be based on it.
All right, so when the district court, in his judgment, has his statement of reasons, and he calculates the guidelines, this is on JA 27.
Yes.
Where he says the total offense level is 34.
And he does put in his statement of reasons the career offender range, but that does not take away from the fact that the sentence that Mr. Berry actually got, the sentence that was agreed to, was based on not that career offender range, but was based on the non-career offender range.
Well, I guess I'm back to Judge Tatel's question. How do we know that?
We know that from the pre-sentence report. We know that from the reference
All right.
in the...
So we need to see the pre-sentence report. And my understanding is, if you look at this pre-sentence report, it calculates the guidelines based on both
it does.
The career offender and the non-career offender.
It does. So I'm saying that it's a combination of the reference in the in the plea agreement, the pre-sentence report calculations that support our position that it was 168 to 210 months, Mr. Berry's own submission that it was based, his understanding of the negotiation was that it was based on the bottom of the non-career offender range, and the fact that the government didn't dispute it below.
Well, let me just ask you, on this JA 27 where the district court is stating his reasons, number 3 of this form is titled Court Determination of Advisory Guideline Range Before Departures. So the judge doesn't mention anything about a non-career offender guideline range. He's only talking about the career offender. And if that's what the judge was thinking would apply, then why isn't the 168 clearly a departure?
Because it doesn't, the statute doesn't require that the guideline range that the sentence was determined on be determined by the district court. The district court may have determined that the career offender applied, but the sentence that he actually imposed was the stipulated sentence, and the stipulated sentence was determined based on the non-career offender range. There's nothing in the statute that requires...
Well, what I'm trying to understand, though, is the judge has the pre-sentence report before him. It gives him two options under the guidelines. According to his judgment, he chooses one of them, which is the career offender, which, at least when I read it, said to me, well, if the judge was imposing the sentence, he would look to the career offender guideline range, which has nothing to do with 168 months.
I agree. But I don't think that that fact changes the analysis, which because the only thing the court needs to look at is whether or not the sentence that he actually received was determined based on a guideline range that's been reduced. So
okay.
What the court...
All I'm getting at is that's why I started where I did, that your position is that if a plea agreement includes a reference to the guidelines in regard to the amount of drugs for which your client is being held responsible, that's really enough. But here we go further, and you're saying because even though the district court didn't view this case as a non-career offender case, we know from the pre-sentence report, because there was an alternative calculation, that this is a sentence based on the bottom of the non-career offender guideline sentencing range. I mean, is that your argument?
Well, it's a little bit more than that, because what has to be shown is that the stipulated sentence was based on a range that's been reduced. So even if that may not be what the lawfully applicable guideline range is according to what the judge has determined, it is the range that the parties agreed to base the sentence on, and then the court accepted that agreement, and therefore the sentence is based on that agreement and that range that has then been reduced.
I mean, if that were in the plea agreement, I would understand your argument, but I just don't see it in the plea agreement itself.
I understand that it's not in the plea agreement specifically that this is why we're picking this number, but I don't think that it needs to be, it should be a requirement that it's in the plea agreement that this is why we're picking a specific number if the record clearly shows that this is why we picked this number based on this range that's now been reduced.
And when you say if the record clearly shows, and you're relying on the pre-sentence report?
I'm relying on the pre-sentence report, and I'm relying on the undisputed contention below that it was based on that. So if the court does not believe that the record clearly supports that, then the court should send it back to the district court to make that finding, because I certainly did not get an opportunity before the district court to address the government's argument that it was not based on that.
And do you have a reference in the record where the government acknowledged it was based on the non-career offender guideline range?
Within the record is the government's opposition to
right.
our motion, which says nothing about us being incorrect about the guideline range and says only that we were not eligible because it was a Rule 11C plea. If the government had said in their response to our motion, it's what they're saying now, which is you're not eligible because it's a Rule 11C plea, and even if you could be eligible for a Rule 11C plea, yours wasn't based on a sentencing range that's been reduced, then I would have filed another pleading saying, yes, it was, and put further support in the record as to why it was. But I never had that opportunity because the government didn't make the argument below.
So is it... Your theory is that, well, give me an example of a case of a sentence that would not be based on. Would that be a sentence that's not within the appropriate guideline range? Is that what that would be?
Accepting for a moment that Gaul does not mean that every sentence is based on the guideline range, then I think that if the guideline range is 168 to 210 months and all the parties agree, well, you agree to a sentence of 240 months instead because we're going to dismiss these charges and we're going to do this, and so we're going to agree that you're going to get 240 months instead and we're not going to pay attention to what the guidelines say. Then in that case, the stipulated sentence is not related to the guidelines because the parties didn't determine mm-hmm. the stipulated sentence based on the guideline range. They determined it based on what they thought was an appropriate sentence given a number of other mm-hmm. factors.
And as far as you're concerned, it's enough we can just look at the record and see that it's within the guideline range. That's as far as we have to go.
It is the bottom of the guideline range.
Right. No, I agree.
More than a coincidence. And I would
we don't have to pursue that any further to find out whether that's just coincidence?
I don't think the court does. I would note that the Tenth Circuit has referred to the fact that it's that it would ignore the plea agreements. I would also refer to the fact that in the Fifth Circuit recently denied a similar motion, but in doing so, the court noted that the guideline range didn't correspond. The parties had stipulated to a 240-month minimum, and the court, in denying the defendant's request to go below that minimum in the 3582 proceeding, noted that that 240-month term was not anchored by the guideline range, and none of the guideline ranges terminated or had their midpoint at the 240 months, which suggests that the Fifth Circuit recognized that if you're picking a number that's the bottom of the not of the applicable guideline range, then it's enough to suggest that it's not merely a coincidence, because the parties didn't just come up with a number. The parties did what everybody does in a criminal case. They did the guideline calculations, and then they picked the bottom of the non-career offender range.
And what does paragraph 4 of the plea agreement mean? I was looking for some indication somewhere that there was some acknowledgement that this was, you know, a non-career offender case. And paragraph 4, it seemed to me, might be where that would be located. But it's just a very general statement that sort of says, well, if this plea isn't accepted by the district court, then the court will apply the guidelines. And then when we look at the judgment, the court says, well, I would calculate the advisory sentencing range under the career offender provision.
I do agree that it's unfortunate that the parties didn't specifically state in the agreement that this is why we're picking this particular number and that we think maybe the career offender guidelines apply. It does seem clear from the record that the parties had concerns about the career offender range applying, and perhaps that's why they entered into the Rule 11C plea to guarantee that the defendant would get the non-career offender guidelines instead of the career offender guidelines. They didn't set that out in the agreement, but it's not required that they set it out in the agreement. The only thing that's required is the sentence that he got was determined based on the guideline range.
So if we weren't sure at this point and decided we wanted to send this back to Judge, this is Judge Kennedy, right? If we were going to send this back to the district court, would you rely on anything other than the pre-sentence report to make your case that this was, in fact, a non-career offender sentence? Would you just point to that? Is that what you would do?
I think I could point to other things. And I
what else would you point to?
I think I could talk to the lawyers that were involved in negotiating it. And I do understand that the argument that the government would probably make is
so then the district court would the district court have the lawyers testify? Is that how you would do it?
I guess
and they would come in and they'd say, yeah, this is what we did. We started with the career offender, but we negotiated a non-career offender, and that's how we picked this number?
I guess it would depend on the circumstances. In this case, frankly, I would be surprised if the government counsel that negotiated would not agree that it was the bottom of the guideline range and would suggest that they just picked a number from nowhere. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the court can look at those factors, and I know that the government's response to that is going to be, well, that's going outside of the agreement. But we're not really here trying to determine what the meaning of the agreement is. We're trying to determine what his sentence was based on, and that may, yes, require going outside of what the plea agreement itself says.
Thank you. We'll give you a minute. Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Counsel for appellee.
Good morning. May it please the court, Sarah Chasson on behalf of the United States. When appellant and the government presented their agreement to the district court, appellant never understood that the district court was going to consider the guidelines when it imposed his sentence. He understood that if his agreement was accepted, he was going to receive a 14-year sentence. And we know that from the record. We know that because Judge Kennedy explicitly said to appellant, this is a C plea. And therefore, quote, the sentence that will be imposed should I accept this agreement is 14 years. Appellant also understood that if Judge Kennedy did not accept the agreement, one of three things would happen. He would be back at square one at the bargaining table with the government because he could withdraw his plea. He could be in front of a jury at trial trying to prove his innocence, or he could be sentenced in accordance with the sentencing guidelines pursuant to paragraph four.
So is it the government's position that no C plea can be, quote, based upon the guidelines?
The government's view is that no C plea that, as here, has a defined term of incarceration.
Well, isn't that the definition of a, if it had a range, it would be different?
I think a range would also be subject to the same rule. If you have
Well, then give me an example of a C plea that would, that could be based upon.
The department's view is that all C pleas are based upon the agreement, not the range. There may be a possibility in cases such as Garcia, which came down last week, where the load-bearing part of the sentence was expressly dedicated to the district court to decide, and was dedicated to the district court to decide by reference to the crack guideline. So the legal basis for that sentence mm-hmm. was deferred to the district court.
Suppose it's totally clear from the record in a C agreement that the parties negotiated the sentence based on the sentencing guidelines. Let's just assume that it's just completely clear, okay? They talked about it, it's on the record, and they picked it. And the judge, before he approved the agreement, and therefore was bound by the sentence, on the transcript, went through the guidelines and made sure that the agreed upon sentence was within the guidelines.
Okay.
Still not based upon?
Still not based upon the guidelines. It doesn't matter what the background mix of information is.
Why would Congress have done that?
Because
Congress wanted, why would Congress have wanted a system whereby people who plead, that is, don't go to trial, save the government and everybody money, right? Time. They don't benefit from the reduction in the guideline range, but defendants who choose to go to trial do get the benefit of it. Why would Congress have intended that?
Congress did not intend that. Congress gave defendants a choice. If you want finality and predictability and a guaranteed sentence, you can plead guilty under Rule 11C1C. Uh-huh. If you want to give that up, if you don't want the guarantee that you are going to get the bargain that you negotiated, which, as Ms. Petras said, is something that some defendants really do want.
But in terms of benefiting from the reduced sentence, why would Congress have wanted to exclude them from that benefit?
Because a C plea is different. They got something in addition. They got finality. What they gave up from finality is the chance to undo that bargain later. They lost the chance to have the district court tinker with it at all. If they wanted the chance to revisit their bargain later under some narrow exception to the general rule that says your sentence is your sentence, then they needed to plead guilty under Rule B1B.
Is there any way they can get out from under it and your reading of 1C?
Well, I mean, there's ordinary ways that one can challenge a plea agreement. I mean, if you got ineffective assistance of counsel or you didn't know.
But in the agreement itself, there's nothing they could have done to have said that this is that the range that we're coming up with in the plea agreement is based on the guidelines. If they had used that language, that's insufficient for you.
That is insufficient to get out of a C plea. Yes.
So your theory is, the government's theory then is that the only way a defendant under wanting a C plea can protect himself is by specifically providing in the agreement that he's not waiving his rights under 3582, right?
I think there's a serious question about whether that would be enforceable, because it's our view that you cannot undo, you cannot tinker with
it. I thought your answer to my question was that you couldn't, that if you go under the C plea, that you can't get the benefit of what Congress has done for others.
Yes, and Judge Tatel, I thought, was asking me whether you could waive the applicability of the binding nature of a C plea, and I don't know that you can. I've never seen...
Well, but 3582 is a statute creates a right to a reduced sentence if, I mean, it would be a little odd to say that, it seems to me that, are you sort of endorsing this contract theory that some of the other circuits have?
Well, it's...
Is that your point, that you have to specifically, you were even saying, I take it, that you couldn't even, is your point that the court couldn't accept a C plea if it provided in it, if it had a precise sentence plus a provision that said this is, of course, subject to 3582C?
I don't know that the court could accept that plea. Hmm. What I do know is that here the parties bargained for a specific fixed sentence. The district court accepted that specific fixed sentence. That agreement by itself became the legal basis for his plea.
Okay, but the statute says based upon. All the statute says is based upon, right?
Yes.
Okay, so based upon could mean that the sentence that the parties agreed to was arrived at after considering the sentencing guidelines. Wouldn't that be based upon?
Not within the context of Rule 11, because the only legal basis...
You mean Rule 11C?
Rule 11C, I'm sorry. Uh-huh. The only legal authority for this sentence is the party's agreement.
Right, I understand that argument. I understand that argument, but we're interpreting a statute.
Yes.
And the statute said based upon.
Yes.
And I don't see how it would violate the statute to hold that a sentence is based upon that if the record shows that the parties negotiated a sentence within the guideline range and the district judge, before accepting the agreement, assured himself that it was in fact within the guideline range. Why wouldn't that be based upon?
Because based upon has to encompass the notion of legally based upon.
And why? It doesn't say that.
This court has, you know...
Congress could have written this statute differently. In fact, what it could have done is it could have accepted C, please, from 3582. Didn't do that.
It didn't have to, because the C plea cannot be tinkered with. But that's for the same reason that, you know, we didn't need to obtain some sort of acknowledgement.
See, you keep stating your conclusion. You know, it can't be tinkered with only if based upon means what you say it means. If based upon means what I suggest it might mean, then it can be tinkered with.
But the court's ruling... I respectfully disagree with the court's interpretation.
I thought you might.
In this,
yes.
In this context. You know, it just,
I'm not surprised.
You know, right. You're not surprised. And right. But, you know, the weight of the other circuits that have considered this have also come down in the government's view. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not a novel proposition. You know, the sixth and the
eighth. Could you rehearse for me again the answer you gave to Judge Tatel? I'm sorry, I just didn't follow it. You're asking us to believe that Congress made a policy choice, that there's a difference between someone who goes to trial and is given a guideline range that's later has the ability to be reduced, and someone who enters a plea but then doesn't get the later benefit of the reduction to the guideline range. I know you answered this before. Why would Congress, or why, in your view, did Congress distinguish between those two groups of people? Well, why does one group get the benefit of the reduction and the other does not?
Well, there's a third group of people, Judge Griffith, because there are many ways to plead guilty, and a Rule 11 C1C plea is only one of those ways. If you plead guilty under Rule 11 C1C, it binds the court. If you plead guilty under Rule 11 C1B, it does not bind the court. You can agree to anything you want. We could have both gone in there and said, we recommend a sentence of 168 months, and Judge Kennedy, under those circumstances, could have said, I accept your recommendation, or he could have said, you know what, you're a career offender, and I'm looking at all of the facts and circumstances surrounding your case, and I'm looking at the 3553A factors, and I think that you should get that additional 100 months, even though the government is recommending that I not impose it. So if you want to take that risk, and if you want to have the opportunity to later come back and say, you know what, I got a guideline sentence. My sentence is based on the guidelines. You
plead
guilty.
The Congress made a judgment here that at least for some category of convicts, that they would get the benefit in the reduction of the sentencing guideline, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But you're saying that those who chose C didn't get, the Congress made a conscious choice not to give them the benefit of the guideline reduction.
Yes.
Okay.
And that is a choice that is up to them. And in this case, you know, it had a big benefit.
And we know that because what? In other words, is there some legislative history?
Well, it's the logical reading of B and C together. I mean, if B gives the district court...
Well, is there any evidence that Congress looked at the subsections of Rule 11?
There is in the legislative history a
really?
Reference.
What does it say?
C is meant to be... That reiterates that a C plea is meant to be final.
The legislative history of, we're talking about 3582?
I think of Rule 11.
Yes, of course, Rule 11. But we're interpreting 3582 here.
We're talking about the policy judgment Congress made in 3582, and you're asking us to say, to imagine that Congress made a distinction between these groups of people. And clearly what Congress was after was there was a sense that something unfair had happened, right?
Yes.
But now you're saying that their concern for unfairness did not extend to those who had entered into a plea under C1, even if they recite in their plea agreement that this agreement is based upon our understanding of the guidelines.
Yes.
Guidelines later change. Congress has now made the decision. They don't get the benefit of that. Now,
yes, that is the logical.
And it's a finality principle, you're saying.
It's a finality principle that is necessary to give effect to Rule 11C1C. Otherwise, there is just absolutely no difference between that type of plea agreement and a B1B agreement or a B1B.
Well, there's a difference in a whole range of areas, just not as it applies to 3582. The judgment would be 3582 changed the landscape for those pleas that were based upon the guideline, language of the statute, based upon the guideline.
Yes. And there's no reason to think that Congress would have intended such a windfall to happen in the case.
Why is that a windfall?
Well, because
explain to me why it's a windfall for. Congress expected many convicted people convicted of crack cocaine offenses to. This is a windfall for everybody, right?
It is a windfall,
and it's retroactive, and that's the way Congress intended it, right?
Yes.
So.
But in the case of the agreement,
I think what we're all having trouble with is we understand the difference between a C plea and the other kinds of pleas.
Yes.
What I'm having trouble understanding is what, since based upon is, to say the least, ambiguous, right? You would agree that, wouldn't you? Based upon is not clear here. You're arguing that we should interpret it this way because of the way you interpret a C agreement.
Yes.
Okay. So since based upon could be read either way, could be read your way or the way the defendant's reading, what we're having trouble understanding is what's the policy reason for taking this category of defendants? Defendants who, for whatever reason, chose C pleas. And it's not that they were convicted of different kinds of crimes or different circumstances. That's what they wanted. What's the policy reason for saying that group of defendants is not entitled to the retroactive benefit of the new crack cocaine guidelines?
The policy reason is, again, to retread somewhat trodden ground, is because they got a chance to buy everything up front and to achieve certainty. And once you've gotten that very large benefit, which according to Ms. Petras's review of what the government thinks is a silent record on this score, but according to her view of this, this resulted in a guaranteed 100 months off of the guideline range, something that the district court could not reimpose, no matter how much he felt Mr. Berry might have individually deserved it. And that's worth quite a bit. And so in order for Mr. Berry to obtain that fail-safe, that sure, that guarantee of 14 years, he can't go now and go lower after, in Ms. Petras's view, getting the government to give up career offender as part of the entire bargaining package to get to a result that every single party said, you know, in view of all of his backup time, in view of what he's done, this is the right result. For Mr. Berry to now come into the district court and say, you know, I really needed another 30 or 40 months off of that, there's no reason to think the government ever would have agreed to that in the first place. All we know is that
those are different issues, though. I understand your point. I mean, Rule 11 pleas are final in one sense, And we get your point about certainty. Anything further?
Not on behalf of Mr. Berry, no.
Thank you. All right, counsel for appellant.
What do you think about this point that the C plea is different because it guaranteed certainty?
I think,
and that's the deal. That's what C pleas are for. And we are undermining that by considering the possibility that a C plea could be retroactively modified.
I think it completely ignores the existence of 3582C2. When the plea agreement is negotiated, both parties know that 3582C2 exists. The government's suggestion that you're somehow waiving your rights under 3582C2 when you sign off on a C plea is not correct, because there's nothing in that agreement that waives that. And
well, because I think what they're saying, look, for sentence, it's based upon the guidelines. It makes sense to say that if the guidelines are changed, it would then be retroactively modified. But in a C agreement, where you get this certainty, you know, the deal is X number of months. There's no reason to reconsider it just because the guidelines changed. It doesn't affect the certainty of the plea.
But that actually ignores reality, because the in certain C pleas, like Mr. Berry's, the guarantee was the bottom of the non-career offender range. If you look at the circumstances, it's clear, at least to me, that the career offender, there was some talk about whether or not the career offender applied.
You see, the government's view is that doesn't make any difference.
But it does
I think
make
they
a
would
difference.
Say, no, but they're, under their view, that makes, we could accept your proposition here. In fact, it looks like you're right, that this was based on the non-career offender range. The government says that doesn't make any difference.
It does, because it goes to what the purpose of 3582. The purpose of 3582 is to give people who were sentenced to a range based on a range that we've now determined is incorrect a chance to go below that. Now, the fact that he got to that non-career offender range, perhaps only by the agreement and not by disputing the career offender range, doesn't change the analysis that everyone came up with the 168 mm-hmm. by looking at a range that we now know the Sentencing Commission has said is not the correct range. So he falls squarely in the category of defendants who should be able to have the judge consider a reduction, because his sentence was based on that range that we now know is not fair. And there can be no question, really, too, that if this circumstance happened today, and I have a client there may or may not be a career offender, and I want to negotiate down to the non-career offender range and give him that guarantee, and he had the same numbers as Mr. Berry, he would be getting the two levels down, and he would agree to the bottom of the non-career offender range. And that's the problem here, because his sentence was based on that factor, and that factor has been reduced, and the statute allows him to get the reduction based on that.
All right. Thank you. We will take the case under advisement.